people all off season would ask, well, how are you going to play all these guys? Are you going to play? I mean, I'm sitting there just laughing, going, Skyler's the most consistent guy we got. What are you talking about? He's going to play. He's the best one we got right now.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the latest edition of Boot Up, the LSU basketball podcast. I'm Cody Worsham, digital media reporter for LSU Athletics. Glad you could be here. On today's show, we are going to look back at LSU's 1-2 trip to Orlando last week at the Advocare Invitational. Not what the Tigers wanted to get. Showed a lot of things that LSU needs to work on if they're going to compete at the level they would like to compete at this year. But also some things that I think that there's some building blocks there and some correctable mistakes that if LSU addresses, and I know that Will Wade will address it with the team, that if they address those things and fix them, they've got a chance to still have a very special season. So we're going to look back at that weekend. We're also going to look at some of the problems that popped up over the weekend for LSU in those two losses and maybe some of the solutions to those problems. After that, I'm going to take a second quickly to pump a little sunshine, just so it's not all doom and gloom here on Boot Up the LSU Basketball Podcast. We're going to talk about one guy who had a good weekend and is off to a really, really good start this year for LSU. We're going to preview Saturday's game against Grambling. That's a 4 p.m. tip off at home. Also, for those who are interested in bringing out the kids, it's Youth Day. So that would mean $1 will get the kids in the door, and they're also going to be able to shoot free throws on the floor after the game. So that's for kids 12 and under on Saturday. Good chance to get the kids out there. My parents will be out there. They're not kids. They don't qualify for the kids promotion, but my parents will be there because it is a birthday present to my mom. Happy birthday to you, Mom. And also, that's a day that I'm moving, which will be fun. That'll be great. I'll get to move all morning, get to pack a bunch of bags and throw them in the back of a U-Haul and move into a new house and then come out and check the Tigers out after. So should be exciting. I'm sure I will be quite exhausted, but hey, I'm always down for some hoops no matter what's been going on for the rest of the day. And then also, speaking of the PMAC, at the very end of the show, we are going to hear from LSU Assistant Director for Athletics, Matt Laborde. He is Assistant AD for Finance and Business. He's also one of the supervisors with supervisors for the men's basketball team along with Virge Ausberry. Matt's going to come on and give fans a little insight into some of the new food options in the PMAC this year and also try to give me some advice on how to get those food options available to the media for free. Because the free food for the media, and look, Will Wade has a way of putting this that I think sums it up really well. Media stands for Mooch Every Day in Abundance. That's very true. We like to mooch. We like our free food. And you know what? I'm not going to complain about any free food. But sometimes in the media tables at the PMAC, the food is just hot dogs and chili and nacho cheese. And look, nothing against hot dogs, all American food, right? But I'm not a big fan of hot dogs. And I'm also not a big fan of cheese that gets dispensed via a button. Like, I like cheese. I prefer like a slice of cheese or maybe some grated cheese, but when it's liquid and it's dispensed out of a little container with a button, it's not my forte. Not to knock it. There's people who love that stuff. I get it. And the same certainly applies to chili. I like my chili out of a bowl with a ladle maybe. And, you know, not a huge fan of button dispensed chili either. But if you are a fan, look, I understand sometimes the heart wants what it wants. I'm not going to knock your hustle. However, if you do, like me, prefer maybe something different, the PMAC has that this year with some really good options that Matt goes over. It's Burger Smith, it's Chick-fil-A, Fuzzy's Tacos, Dippin' Dots. I mean, there's some really good food in the PMAC this year. So fans will definitely have new options on their plate at the PMAC this year, and also new ways to order it, which is really cool, and it should help with some of the lines. So, okay, enough food talk for now. We will now get into the hoops talk. We'll get back into it with Matt a little bit later. Matt also played basketball in high school. We grew up playing against each other, playing with each other. So he's going to give a little insight. He was in Orlando with the team. He'll give a little insight on what it was like to be on the ground there in Orlando and share his observations of Kent Lowe at Disney World, which, I mean, you can't get that anywhere else. This is the kind of inside access you get on Boot Up. So, okay, let's get to the hoops talk now. As I mentioned, LSU goes 1-2 over the weekend at the Advocare Invitational. They beat Charleston in the first game, 67-55. good win for LSU over a good team that's been in the NCAA tournament. We'll be back in the NCAA tournament, I'm sure, this year. But then a heartbreaking loss to Florida State in overtime, and got beaten pretty thoroughly by Oklahoma State on Sunday. So the way that I want to do this is I'm not going to go back detail by detail through the games. Just look at some big numbers, some trends, that sort of thing. The problems that arose in those games, and maybe some of the solutions. And I'll borrow heavily from the Will Wade show on Monday. We haven't had any media availability yet. And I know the basketball coaches are hard at work in the lab, so we're just going to borrow from Will Wade's interview with Chris Blair on the Will Wade show on Monday, which was really good as always. Will is one of the most honest coaches there is, and Chris did a great job interviewing him. So really insightful show to listen to, and I'll just grab a few choice clips from there. But first, my observations from the weekend. Starting just in whole, let's start as a whole. I break it down this way. LSU played 125 minutes of basketball in Orlando. They had the three 40-minute games plus a five-minute overtime against Florida State. Of that 125, there were 77 minutes of elite basketball. Like LSU for the first game against Charleston and for the first 37 minutes against Florida State, they looked like a contender. They looked like a potential NCAA tournament team, not just a potential NCAA tournament team, a team with the chance to make a deep run in the NCAA tournament, a Sweet 16 type of team. They were defending. They were getting some things offensively done that they needed to get done. It wasn't perfect. There were certainly some issues, and issues that ended up hurting them once they popped up more late in that Florida State game and then against Oklahoma State. But for 77 minutes, they looked like an elite basketball team. And then the next 48 minutes, the last 3 minutes of regulation against Florida State, the last 5 minutes of overtime, and then the 40 minutes against Oklahoma State, that was 48 minutes of lessons to be learned. So you take 77 minutes of really good basketball and good film and stuff to build on, and then 48 minutes of things that you've got to fix. And that's what LSU comes away with besides the 1-2 record over the weekend. I'll look at it sort of in two parts, the good part and then the not-so-good part. The good part is against Charleston and Florida State. They shot the three better, and they defended the three better. And I pointed that out on the last episode of Boot Up. LSU was really struggling to shoot from three. They were below 30%. They were struggling to defend the three. The opponents were shooting above 40%. They fixed that in the first two games. In those first two games, Charleston and Florida State shot a combined 14 of 50 from three. That's 28%. LSU shot a combined 18 of 46. So that's 39%. That's much better. They defended the three better. They shot the three better. And that was a focus for the team going in. That was something that in the extended break before the tournament, Will Wade talked about quite a bit. And he talked about it on the LSU Sports Radio Network before the Charleston game, and talked about the way to fix some of the defensive issues for LSU was to fix some of the offensive issues and to get rid of what he called the atomic bombs.
We spent a majority of our time working on our offense. Our offense has just been not good enough for my liking. I know we've scored a bunch of points, but it just hasn't been good enough. It's not sustainable what we're doing. We'll see a team that hopefully plays a little bit faster, gets the ball up the court, and really, really gets the ball in the paint and plays inside out. So I think we'll see that today, and that will help our defense. We won't shoot the turnovers. I call them atomic bombs, where you kill everybody. Nothing, nobody's left when some of the shots we take or some of the live ball turnovers that we have. So, we've got to make sure that we limit those and run good offense, which will in turn help our defense.
And when you look at those first 77 minutes in the tournament, I thought LSU did a pretty good job with a lot of that. I thought their shot selection was a lot better. I thought they did try to play inside out. It looked like they were certainly getting better looks from three. They were making them, and they were defending the three-point line a little bit better. But they fixed those problems, and then other problems popped up. But for those first 77 minutes, I thought LSU defended much better. I thought they played relatively tough. I thought they were pretty engaged, certainly against Charleston. They played really hard. I thought they were the aggressor in that game. Florida State, one issue early that ended up catching up to LSU late was that I think Carl Ravitch was on the broadcast. He pointed this out. Florida State was getting a lot of the 50-50 balls, and by the end of the game, they were getting every single one of them, and that became a problem. But for the most part, those first 77 minutes, LSU did a lot of good things. Their spacing was good offensively. They got good shots. They defended better than they have all year. Skylar Mays played really well. We'll talk more about him later in the show. Javonte Smart was phenomenal in the second half against Florida State. Just took that game over and showed you what he's capable of. there was a lot to like there. And Florida State, we've said this before on the show, and Will Wade has said it before too, that's a team that was a couple plays away from the Elite Eight, from the Final Four last year after making the Elite Eight. That's a team that brings back eight of their top nine players. That's a good team, and LSU was not only toe-to-toe with them, but pulled ahead by nine with 3 minutes left. And at that point, according to KenPom.com, which is a website you'll hear me reference a lot on this show, LSU had a 95% chance of winning the game. 95%. Things just fell apart after that, though. Skylar Mays hit the three. Florida State came right back down, hit a three. I think it was actually the same player who hit the game-winning three later in overtime. He hit the three to cut it to from nine to six, and that's actually the only 2 3-pointers he had hit on the season up to that point. I think, don't quote me on that. He certainly hadn't hit a bunch. He was a pretty good 3-point shooter last year, though, so he's capable. But regardless, LSU goes up nine, and then they give up the quick three, and things kind of fell apart. And you know, the way that LSU lost against Florida State, everyone that watched is pretty obvious. They couldn't grab an offensive rebound. They couldn't grab a defensive rebound, and Florida State was grabbing offensive rebound after offensive rebound. The final tally was 22-3. You know, there were some other things too. You know, LSU got a couple decent looks. Tremont Waters missed a layup late. He had a couple free throws late that I think he missed one of them. And if he'd have made it, Florida State would have needed a three instead of a two to tie. You know, that kind of stuff happens. That's basketball. That tends to happen. Some of their sets late against Florida State, they just took too long to get into them, or when they ran them, they weren't quite aggressive enough. I think the way that Will Wade put it in either his post-game interview or maybe on his radio show, I can't remember where I heard him say it, but instead of attacking when the ball was passed, LSU kind of held it and tried to run more clock, and they just didn't quite have the aggression that you need to finish a game. And if you've heard Will Wade say it before, you've heard him say it a million times, his saying, and it's plastered on the wall at the PMAC practice facility, is chance favors the aggressor. And Florida State ended up being the aggressor late in that game. And so that's, you know, not that LSU played soft or anything in that regard against Florida State. They did have trouble grabbing rebounds. That turned out to be a massive issue. Some of that's personnel. We'll get into some of that in a little bit. But that's also a really good team that took advantage of honestly, like a very substantial size differential. If you watch that game, I was watching that game on the way to College Station. I ended up watching the replay again in the last couple days. Florida State just looked bigger. Like, they just looked like a bigger, more physical team, a more physically developed team. They had a 6'6 guy on Tremont Waters. They had size. You know, LSU was certainly the smaller team. And if you look at it statistically, according to KenPom, LSU ranks 185th nationally in average height. That's 13th in the SEC. And Florida State is 19th nationally and would be at the top of the SEC or toward the top of the SEC in average height. So there was some physical issues to overcome there too, and LSU might have to address those. We'll get to that in a little bit. But the Oklahoma State game, I think the less said about that, the better. I had trouble watching that film, knowing the result, also having been at the Texas A&M game on Saturday and dealing with that whole whatever that was. I didn't really have it in my heart to watch another tough beat for LSU. Not necessarily that was tough, but LSU just did not play well at all against Oklahoma State. I did watch it. It just kind of looked like a team that didn't want it as much as Oklahoma State. I hate to speak in cliches that way, but just a team that looked like it was sleepwalking a little bit. A team that was settling for shots that they could get any time in the shot clock rather than trying to get what they wanted offensively. And then defensively, when you give up 90 points, you're not going to beat anybody. And, you know, all the three-point defense that LSU did well in the first couple games went away. Oklahoma State shot really, really well from three. There's a lot of things you could pinpoint that went wrong for LSU. I'll let Will Wade speak for himself on this matter. He took the blame for that loss. And if you saw him on the sideline in the second half when the camera panned to him, he didn't look all that upset with his team. There's a reason for that, and he lays it out here.
You know, when you lose to Florida State, that was some more technical stuff and not just being able to close out a game. We messed up a few technical things. You can go back and correct that stuff. But when you lose like you did, like we did to Oklahoma State, everything's on the table at that point. When you just get beat up like that, everything's on the table, and you got to look inward, and you know, I've got to change some things, and it's my fault. I prepared us soft for the game because I thought it was our third game in 4 days, and I let him go to Disney World on Saturday, and we did a walkthrough instead of doing what I normally would do, which is we would never go to Disney World, as you know, Chris. And we would have sat in there and we'd have practiced for about 2.5 hours. And that's what I wanted to do, but I told myself, you know what, let's do this. And so I let him go to Disney for 3 hours, and we did a nice little walkthrough, and we played like that. We played like we were at Disney World, and we played like we did a walkthrough, and Oklahoma State played like they practiced hard and were ready to play, and we weren't. So I didn't have our guys ready to go. I didn't prepare our guys well enough, and we certainly didn't play well enough.
So expect a very difficult week of practice for LSU this week, to say the least. That can be good, though. That can be good for a team, having been in situations like this with teams before at different levels. Sometimes getting your feelings hurt at a tournament like this and getting beat pretty bad in a last game, it can be turned into a positive with the right coaching, with the right approach. It can be a wake-up call. It can be some film to make corrections and to show some guys, hey, like maybe you're not as good as you think you are. I can't remember how many times in locker rooms that I had to watch those film sessions where the coach reminded us that we weren't as good as we thought we were. At the time, I did not like hearing it. Looking back, they were probably right, and I'm sure there will be a lot of that going on over in the practice facility this week for LSU. Look, I said it on the very first episode of Boot Up, and I'll say it again now. I'm really confident this team is going to be better in March than it is in November, and I think this game, this Oklahoma State game, is going to be one that they learn from and they improve from, and I think the first 77 minutes of this Orlando tournament is more of what to expect from this team than the last 48, but we'll see. This is a big week for them. They've got not as busy of a game schedule over the next couple weeks, but just two games over the next couple weeks because of finals and all that stuff. So some time to focus and bear down. So some of the problems that they're going to talk about this week over at practice and in film session, I want to talk about those and then also some of the solutions that there could be to some of those problems. One of the biggest problems for LSU, not just this year, but also last year, but more of a surprise this year, I think, just because of the personnel. LSU keeps having trouble with these smaller, undersized four men, these power forwards who can play on the perimeter, who can play mid-range, who can use their physicality around the rim. They're not necessarily 6'10", 6'11 guys, but they're these 6'6", 6'7 guys that are giving LSU fits. It happened again in Charleston, in Orlando, even in the Charleston game where Jarrell Brantley went off for a huge game. It's happened multiple times for LSU this year. Here's Will Wade talking about that on the Will Wade Show.
We've got a major problem at guarding fours. You know, Brantley went off for almost 30 on us. McGriff yesterday from Oklahoma State had 28 on us. That was a career high. The kid, number 10 from Louisiana Tech, had 20 on us. I mean, we're giving up 21 points and 7 rebounds a game at the four spot, and we're getting about 9 points and 7 rebounds a game. So we're minus 12 at the four. I mean, before we even throw the ball up right now, we're in a 12-point deficit from the four man.
The solution to that, at least for now, seems to be pretty simple for LSU. You're going to have a change in personnel. You're going to see certain guys get a little bit more playing time. Probably some other guys see less playing time, of course, because that's how these things work. And here's Will Wade talking about the guys that he's going to give more playing time, specifically Darius Days and Marlon Taylor.
Days is the one that we got to play more, and so we're going to look at moving him around. He's been playing exclusively at the four. We're gonna play him some at the three, and we're gonna be big. When you shoot him close to the rim, you can get on the offensive glass. We're gonna go climb people's back and get on the offensive glass. We're gonna give Marlon Taylor more of a look. We gotta get him going, and we've kind of buried him a little bit, and he's got to get more of an opportunity. He brings athleticism and height. We don't look so small out there. I mean, it's glaring when we play Florida State. We're just small compared to them, and we were small compared. You know, Oklahoma State's got a 6'6" three man, and we're trotting out there. You know, so I mean, that was glaring. So we got to develop Marlon. I mean, he's going to make mistakes, but we got a bunch of other guys out there making mistakes too. So we might as well live with the 6'6" athlete making the mistake.
So a couple of numbers to support the argument for more minutes for Darius Days and Marlon Taylor. If you look at LSU's team defensive rebounding percentage, how many defensive rebounds they're grabbing whenever certain guys are on the floor, they're grabbing the most rebounds as a team defensively when Marlon Taylor is on the floor. Not that his rebounding numbers have been phenomenal, but when he's on the floor, LSU's grabbing more defensive rebounds than they do with any other player on the floor. And the guy that's number two on that list is Darius Days. So those are the two guys that when they're on the floor, LSU's defensive rebounding shoots through the roof. When you just look at those two guys together, Marlon Taylor and Darius Days, LSU scoring offensively, 123 points per 100 possessions. Their offensive rebounding goes up from 33% to 44%, and their defensive rebounding goes up from 65% without them to 74% with them. So you're getting better offense, you're getting better offensive rebounding, and you're getting better defensive rebounding when those two guys play. I think it's pretty obvious why Will Wade wants to play them more. On Marlon Taylor, he just makes, I mentioned this earlier about the Florida State game, he just makes LSU look like a better team. Like, they don't look so undersized, they don't look so small. Part of that is the three-point guard lineup that LSU's been playing with, which we'll touch on in a second. It makes them smaller. When Taylor's at the three, he's 6'6", he's so athletic, he really goes after the glass hard. He had a foul against, I think, Florida State, where he just absolutely crashed into a Florida State guy because he was going after the rebound so hard. Like Will Wade said, he is very raw. They have to play him. They just have to play him to develop him, because you can't develop a guy that raw in practice exclusively. He's got to get game time, and we've seen his ceiling. We've seen the way he can jump. He can catch and shoot the three. He can rebound. Those are some things LSU needs, so they're going to play him. And look, honestly, even though his numbers, if you look at his raw numbers, they're not phenomenal this year, LSU's outscoring teams by 20 points per 100 possessions when he plays. That's the highest on the team. Like, if you look at it per individual, they're plus 20 per 100 when he plays. Nobody else has a number quite that big. So that speaks to the impact that he can have for LSU. When you look at Darius Days, I mean, offensively, he's been super, super efficient. If you were playing more minutes, he'd be averaging a double-double. He's third in the SEC in offensive rating. Skylar Mays is first. More on Skylar in a little bit. He's such a high IQ player. He rebounds everything. He was one of the elite rebounders in high school. He's, I think, second on LSU's team off the top of my head, second in rebounding despite being sixth or seventh in minutes. So he's a guy that's going to have to play, and they'll play him at the three. They'll play him at the four. He'll give you a lot of versatility at both spots. I'm interested to see him at the three because I think that is his future. But he also could be, you know, in the future, one of these small ball fours that LSU keeps having trouble with. Like, he could be a Grant Williams type of player, not to compare him to the SEC player of the year, but in that model, that small ball four that can step out and shoot the three, that can give you fits around the rim, that's physical. He's high IQ. They love his attitude. They love his personality. He's in the right place at the right time. So I'm excited to see Darius Days play more. I like his game. I'm excited to see what his future holds. Okay, one of the other problems that popped up for LSU was their turnovers and how much they turned the ball over. They turned it over 16 times and 18 times, and their two losses there. That's too many. If you look at the numbers, LSU, look, they're still top 20 offensively in terms of efficiency in the country, but they're 152nd in turnover percentage, which is, I mean, if you get that number even into the 70s or the 80s, you're going to see that offensive efficiency go up even more. And Tremont Waters has been pinpointed for a lot of those turnover issues by fans. I understand that. He's had quite a few. He's had at least three in every game. I don't think Tremont is necessarily the problem. I do think Tremont has to play better, and I think Tremont knows that, and Will Wade knows that. But LSU's turning the ball over about the same amount whether or not Tremont's on the floor or not. It's right around 18% when he's on. It's right around 18% when he's off the floor. So when he's on the floor, he's the one turning it over because it's in his hands so much. But when he's off, LSU's still turning it over that similar amount. And, you know, another thing that sort of ties in with that, with the too many turnovers, is how clunky the offense has looked at times. And, you know, I said this on the last show, LSU's been a spurt team. They look great for 2 or 3 minute spurts, and then they look not so great for 3 or 4 minutes. And that's particularly true on offense. I think a big part of that is the shot selection. And it was better for the first half of the tournament, and not quite as good for the second half of the tournament. But I think in general, you're seeing a trend with LSU shot selection where they're not taking as many easy shots as they could. And what I mean by that is they're taking a lot of shots that are easy to get and not working as hard for the shots that are easier to make. So just a quick look at the numbers again. LSU's shooting 59.5% on twos this year. That's one of the best numbers in the country. It's like top 15. But only 37% of their shots are coming at the rim. That's like 152nd nationally. So they're really good at shooting twos, but they're not getting as many as they could. They're settling too much. They're not getting to the free throw line enough. They're 190th in free throw rate. Even though they're a very good free throw shooting team, they're not getting to the line enough. And then the last thing that I feel with the clunkiness of the offense, to me, it feels like there's just too much dribbling going on. It feels like there's not quite enough ball movement, not quite enough ball reversal, not quite enough making the defense work. too much pounding, not enough passing. And that's easy to defend. When you're not passing the ball a lot, when you're not reversing the ball, that's easy for the defense to defend because they don't have to move. The best defense to attack is in a defense that's on the move, that's constantly closing out and recovering. And LSU's taking those quick shots early in the shot clock that aren't quite enough to make the defense work. And there's, again, to talk solutions, there's a very simple solution to that. And for Will Wade, that's to feed the monsters inside.
Our post player, we got Cavell and Emmett that shoot, you know, 65% plus. We got Days and Nas who shoot almost 60% on their twos. And we're not getting those guys enough to – I can fix that real quick. So we're going to get the ball inside. We're going to play inside. It does us no good to have these big bodies if we won't throw it in there. So we're going to get used to throwing the ball in the post, and we're going to play inside out instead of outside in, which is how we've been playing. And we're going to feed those monsters down there, and they're going to go to work. And if they double them, we're going to throw it out. We're going to play 4-on-3 on the perimeter and let those guys play.
I also have a feeling LSU is going to start running more sets or calling more sets than they have previously in the year. I mentioned this on an earlier episode. Last year, LSU ran so many sets. I sat in on one of their film sessions, and Will Wade and Tremont Waters went through all the sets, and it must have been 50 or 60 sets they went through. It was unbelievable how many set plays they had. This year, Will Wade talked earlier in the season about them scaling that back and giving the team more freedom to play. Well, again, the offensive efficiency has been pretty good, but you can see that this offense has room to grow. I think they've looked their best when they're running their sets, when they know exactly what to do, when they have designed ball reversal and designed ball movement. They've just looked a little bit better. So maybe some more sets from LSU, maybe less of the freedom that he was hoping to grant them with the ball screen motion that they were running. I think that'll still be a part of it, and they can grow into that. But a great way to get an offense going is to just give them the basics. Say, hey, here's what we're doing. It's a very simple game plan. We have a size advantage inside. We are pounding the paint. And I remember when I was playing and our coach, you know, anytime that we started struggling offensively, that's like every basketball coach's go-to move, right, is to say, hey, dump it into the big guys. Dump it into the big guys. And I remember when I was playing, it drove me crazy because I was not a big guy. I was a guard. And it drove me crazy because I'd be like, man, these big guys, they're garbage. Like, look, give me the ball. Let me go make a play. And every time the coach would say to feed it to him, I'd get angry about it. But when you get away from the game and you're not playing anymore and you're not in your own head and not thinking that you're better than you actually are, to be quite honest, when you step away from it, that's the right thing to do. And it makes life easier on guards. In fact, when you give it to the big guys, you let them get easy buckets. The defense has to pay attention to them. You start getting easier shots on the perimeter. So I expect that will be the game plan for LSU going forward. And I think it's one that's going to work too, because the bigs can score and it'll just make life easier on those guys on the perimeter. And no one wants to play a game more difficult than it needs to be. And give those big guys the ball. It'll make life easier on you. All right, finally, like I promised, I will pump a little sunshine here. I will give a shout out to Skylar Mays because he has been phenomenal this year. I tweeted it a couple times over the last couple days watching film. The way he's playing on both ends of the court is phenomenal. He's improved so much from his freshman year. When I've known Skylar for a long time. I've watched him since he was a freshman and sophomore in high school. Always been very high on him, but I didn't know he would become the player that he is. He's playing right now, and I think it's sustainable. Maybe not the high-end efficiency as high as it is right now, although maybe it is because he's done it against some good defensive teams, and he's done it for 7 games. But a quick look at his numbers, 14.6 points per game on 55.4% shooting from the field, 46.9 from three, 88.2 from the line. That's incredible efficiency. In fact, he's first in the SEC in offensive rating. The offense has been great. His assist to turnover is still exceptional. I think it's close to 3-1, if not actually 3-1 or better. But where I've been most impressed with Skylar is defensively, how much he's improved. I tweeted out a couple of videos of some of his defensive work against Florida State. He was very good defensively in that game. Against Charleston, he shut down their leading scorer, Grant Riller. And in fact, Riller didn't score when Skylar was on the floor. And then in his next two games, he went for 30-plus in both games. So that's the kind of defense that Skylar played against him. To talk a little bit technically, he's not the fastest guy laterally. Skylar doesn't move side to side with elite speed, although he's gotten much quicker. But what I love what Skylar does defensively when he's guarding the ball, He gets his hands up in the air when he's in a recovery position. He puts his hip on the hip of the attacker, and he uses his strength to just steer that guy wherever he wants him to go. And then he's got good size. He's got good vertical ability. He can get up. He can jump. He can sprint forward. He can sprint back. He moves front and back really well. And laterally, he's improved so much. He's become a really good defensive player. And then just the way that he's well, I'll let Will Wade talk about it. The way that he's emerged as a leader, I think, is just as valuable as anything he's doing on the court.
He's been awesome. I mean, we can't get any more from him. He's been tremendous. I mean, he guards the other team's best perimeter player every game. He works hard. He's consistent. He gets in the gym every day. He's got a 35-minute routine he does every day before practice. You get out what you put in. And so he certainly puts very, very good deposits in the bank and does a good job of making sure that he's prepared. And I'm really pleased. Not only about that, he's developing some confidence with his leadership. He knows the guys now listen to him and really respect him.
So enough looking back for now on the Ivacare Invitational. Let's look ahead really quickly to LSU's game against Grambling on Saturday. Like I mentioned before, that's Youth Day for LSU basketball fans. So kids can get in for $1. And then after the game, kids can 12 and under can shoot free throws on the court. That'll be pretty cool. A little look at Grambling before we get to the interview with Assistant Athletic Director for Business and Finance, Matt Laborde. A sort of a different team than you would expect from a SWAC opponent in the sense that there's some size to this team. In fact, they rank 61st nationally in average height, so they got some size. They got some big guys that can shoot, too. They have 2 6'9" fours who can shoot the three, Axel Maiopo and Devontae Jackson. They got a guard, Ivy Smith Jr., who's 11 points a game, 6 assists a game, 40% from three. He'll be a handful. Their leading scorer is Dallas Polk Hilliard. He's a big, long 6'8" athlete. He averages 14 and 8. He kind of reminds me a little bit of the guy for Louisiana Tech that went off for more than 20. Similar body frame, maybe not quite as well built, but certainly long and athletic, and shoots 39% from three this year. They also have a 7'2" guy, Trevon Bunch, who's a former South Carolina commit. He's going to be a handful in the paint. He's not playing a ton of minutes this year. He's been in a lot of foul trouble, but I mean, 7 foot tall, you can't coach that. And that's going to present its own challenge to LSU. So Grambling is 3-3. They shoot 40% from three as a team. They've got legit size. It's going to be a good test for LSU. And here's Will Wade talking about that matchup.
They've got big guys. They've got a kid Bunch, who's a big kid. They got a kid 21, who's a big spacey. They got 6'9", 6'10", you know, athletic bigs, which, you know, most of those teams kind of look like Southeastern with 6'5", 6'6", undersized kids. They've got some legit size, some legit athleticism. The other thing that stands out is they really shoot the ball well. They shoot 40% as a team from three. Once again, they're 2 4-men. One of their 4-men is 5 of 10 on the year from three. The other one's 2 of 5. So, you know, their 4-men shoot 45, you know, basically 45% from three between the two of them, which has been something that's obviously given us problems when I talk about guarding the four and you got pick and pop fours and fours who can shoot threes. That's problematic for us. So we've got some issues there that we need to make sure we're prepared for and make sure that we get ready for.
All right, I'm going to throw to that interview with Matt Laborde here in a second, where he breaks down some of the food options from the PMAC this year that fans can expect. And also, Matt was there in Orlando, so he can give kind of an on-the-ground perspective of what he saw in LSU's three games there. But I also have been terrible about this, and I apologize. I do want to take your questions on this podcast. I'm so long-winded, whether it comes to writing or talking, that I tend to run long and I skip over the questions. I'm going to address your questions here. I've got two questions to get to today. Anytime you want a question for the podcast, just hit me up on Twitter at Cody Worsham. You can use hashtag good question. I'll find your question. I will try to answer as many as I can. I've got two good ones today. The first one is from Tilda Swinton, who asks, if Days, Bigby, and Taylor are going to play more, how do you see them cutting the rotation? Who's the odd man out? I don't know if there's an odd man out necessarily. Will Wade did talk about maybe shortening that rotation from 9 to 8. I don't know who that person would be. I think you can probably achieve the balance, though, just by shifting minutes around. LSU's only got 9 guys in their rotation. They're redshirting the other 3 guys on scholarship. So when you're looking at a 9-man rotation, if you do the math, you've got 5 players on the floor at all times, 40 minutes per player. That's 200 minutes to work with. If you divide 200 by 9, you're going to get more than 20 minutes to work with each player. And so I think some of the guys who you've seen in the 30s and the high 30s, you'll see that down toward the high 20s or low 30s. And then I think some of the guys who have been in the teens, like Darius Days, like Marlon Taylor, you'll see them up above the 20 mark. I don't know if there's a person that gets cut out. If there is, we'll see. I certainly don't have that information. But I do think you'll see some of the minutes level out just a little bit. Second question is from Josh Pickle at JK Pickle on Twitter. Hey, Cody, I love the podcast. Really excited for the rest of the season. Have a question regarding these holiday trips to play to neutral site. Will Wade change their preparation and itinerary for the trip to Las Vegas, considering it's only one game versus their prep for this past weekend's trip to Orlando? A good question, Josh. First of all, I know that they've changed their road routine in general this year, but that trip to Vegas is actually going to be sort of a two-part trip. It's going to be they're going to go to Houston for the game in Houston, which is going to be a big game. Houston's a good team. And then they're going to fly from I believe they're going to fly from Houston to Vegas. So it is going to be sort of an extended trip. The prep will be a little bit different, obviously, from Advocare because you won't be playing games back to back to back. You'll have some time to scout and prepare. And I think that bodes well for LSU because if you look at games that Will Wade has had time to prepare for throughout his coaching career, I did the numbers last year before SEC play started. He was something like 40-8 in his career in games where he had four or more days of prep. That number, you could extend that forward to this year, and I'm sure it's still just as good. When he has time to prepare and scout and plan and get a scouting report together and get his guys all on the same page, he's really good. And you saw that last year against Michigan at Maui. That was the first game in Maui. LSU beat the eventual national runner-up. You saw that this year with Charleston. When they have time to prepare, they're really good. So I don't know how much it'll change, you know, from Orlando. It'll certainly be different just because you're not going to have all those games back to back to back. I'm sure after the Disney World experience from Saturday that they won't be hitting the Las Vegas Strip as a team. I can't make any promises, but I'm sure Will Wade will have his team focused and ready to play. He really always does when it comes to games with time to prepare, and so I think that plays well into LSU's hands. Okay, let's go ahead and get to that interview with Matt Laborde. We're going to break down not only LSU's trip to Orlando, but also take a look at some of the new food offerings inside the PMAC this year. They're really good, and Matt knows them better than anybody. So here's that interview. All right, back on Boot Up with Assistant Athletic Director for Business and Finance, Matt Laborde. He's also one of the supervisors for men's basketball, along with Verge Osberry. He's going to come on and talk a little bit about some of the food options in the PMAC as LSU gets ready for a couple of home games here over the December days. But also, Matt, first of all, welcome to the show. Second of all, you were in Orlando, right, with the team as they went to the Advocate Invitational.
That is correct. Spent the Thanksgiving holidays over in Orlando.
How was Disney? Did you get any pictures of Kent Lowe in mouse ears? Because that's the one thing I wanted from this trip, and I haven't gotten it yet.
You know, I don't know if I have any on my phone. He did ask that we deleted all photos, but he was constantly begging people to get to the parks and any downtime he had.
Before we talk about some of the food stuff, I know you're a basketball guy. We grew up in Baton Rouge playing basketball against each other a little bit. Shout out to Red Storm.
Yep.
By the way, what was Red Storm? Y'all were the Swamp Chickens first? Were you
right.
Part of Swamp Chickens?
My AAU team when I played was the Swamp Chickens. When I got done playing and came back to coach, we came and coached with the Red Storm.
Yeah, and then I played for Red Storm, which I think was kind of like an evolution of Swamp Chicken. So just to give people a little background, we know what we're talking about. We're basketball guys. But speaking of basketball, just not a great weekend for LSU. Some good things. The way that I talked about it earlier in the show, 125 minutes of basketball, there was 77 minutes of, okay, this team is legit. This is a Sweet 16. This is a March Madness run type of team. And then the last 48 minutes were not very good. The last three of regulation and overtime versus Florida State, and then the last 40 against Oklahoma State. But just from a from your perspective in the stands and sitting next to Kent, who I'm sure gave you an earful just about every opportunity he got, what did you see from the Tigers?
You know, like you said, the Charleston game, I thought we had a great performance. They had a great player in number five, their power forward.
Yeah, he was good, Brantley.
That guy was a load, and he's tough for anybody to handle. And, you know, we've played some similar teams to Charleston earlier in the year, but that's the type of team you could run into in the first round of the NCAA tournament. So the more experience you have playing against guys like that, teams like that, it's only going to help you in the long run. And yep. I thought we played extremely well. The Florida State game, as you said, up until about the 3 or 2 minute mark to go in the second half, I mean, we were clicking on all cylinders. That was a high level basketball game. Back and forth, two great teams. Both teams were making plays. Both teams were making shots. And to be in that game shows how far and how good this team could be
yep.
this upcoming year. You know, that's a game that previous years we might not have been able to go toe-to-toe and throw punches just like that. And, you know, you talked about when we went into overtime. Although we lost in the overtime, you've been in this situation before. When you're in a game like that and you end up going into overtime, it's a little deflating getting into overtime because yep. you felt like you had it. But when we got in there and we got down 5 right out the gate, and we still managed to get back, tie it up, and play through that.
Yeah.
That was pretty impressive to have that grit and not just tuck our heads and really compete to the end.
And it took 2 3-pointers from a guy who's only made 2 3-pointers all year for Florida State, including one that hit the rim 3 or 4 times to fall in. So a lot of bad luck there. And we talked about that early in the show. We don't have to go any further with it. But let's talk about the business that we're here to talk about. Some of the food options, the new food options in the PMAC. It's funny, I was researching for this interview just before, and so I googled PMAC concessions. The first thing that popped up was a Tiger Droppings thread from about 2009, and it said, what are the food options in the PMAC? Is it anything new and good, or is it the same old garbage? So that was 9 years ago. I know they've changed a lot since then, and certainly they've changed even this year from previous years. So what are some of the new options fans can get at the PMAC?
Yeah, so no, that's exactly right. So last year was our first year with our new concessionaire, Aramark, and you know, we had to get our feet underneath us and get some growing pains, and we feel like we got through that, and we're on to the second year. And in the PMAC specifically, we wanted to change some of the items up. We listen to the fans. We hear what they want, and we've tried to accommodate some of their requests. A couple of our new items that we brought on is Burger Smith. We had them actually in Tiger Stadium as well, and they did great in there, and they've off to a good start here in the PMAC. We've also added Fuzzy's Tacos, which is new to campus for us, and they've started off, and they're doing a good job. They are located right on the top of the student section, which should work out well with all of our students because they're familiar with Fuzzy's. And then finally, we brought back Chick-fil-A. It's been several years since they've been here, and as you'd imagine, those Chick-fil-A sandwiches, people gravitate to them, and they've they've been really impressive the first 4 games. We brought back our traditional. We've had Papa John's the last few years and Dippin' Dots, which is always great for the little kids. So those are some of the subcontractors we've got for the PMAC this year. But we've also changed up one of our concession stands. We've inserted a new concept of Zoom food. Concept, you've seen it at your local fast food restaurants. It's a self-ordering kiosk.
Yeah.
It does a couple things for us. One, it puts the speed of service in the consumer's hands, lets them work the computer, place their order, take their time if they want, or if they know exactly what they want, they can go as quick as they want. But it also increases the points of sale for that concession stand. At a typical stand in the PMAC, we can only have 4 cash registers. With the Zoom food, we're able to set up 8 across from the stand. You place your order, you walk across, your food, your drink, ready to go right when you come across.
So essentially that means there should be shorter lines for this and shorter wait times.
Correct. Through the first 4 games, there's been no wait times at the Zoom food. Now, it does take a little bit for fans to become accustomed to it.
Yes,
so we'll get more
experience.
Right, we'll get more traffic hopefully as the season goes on. And so yeah, you might have more people trying to use the 8 kiosks, but so far the lines have been down and it's been quick.
And it's not like it's been small crowds in the PMAC. The crowds have been pretty good. So if the lines aren't long so far, it's been 8,000, 9,000 people. So the crowds will grow as the season goes on, but it seems like that's helping with the lines a little bit.
No, it definitely is. You know, with the PMAC, it's such a old building going back to the early 1970s that a good problem we run into is if we do pack the PMAC from a concessions and restroom standpoint, we're not equipped to handle that amount of people. Now, like I said, that is a good problem and we'll deal with that. But concepts like this, the Zoom food, those are just small things that we're trying to do to, you know, when this does become more of a problem, we get 10,000 plus for an SEC game, we're able to handle it.
You mentioned some of the places, Burger Smith, Chick-fil-A, Fuzzy's, as well as Papa John's, Dippin' Dots. With some of those newer ones, how big is the selection of types of foods? Is it, I imagine it's not a full scale menu offering, but how what's the variety of orders that they could get from a Chick-fil-A or a Burger Smith or a Fuzzy's?
Right, Burger Smith, they have just their burger and then they'll do their fried okra. Chick-fil-A is just their Chick-fil-A sandwich, and then they have at their satellite stands they offer their chips and then I believe a cookie.
Okay.
Fuzzy's Tacos, we do one taco and then also their nachos. And that's the thing. You know, you want them to come showcase all their items, but you also, in a concessions environment, the speed of service is the biggest the biggest factor. So you really got to narrow down the options for the fan.
Is there any way that you know, is there like an employee free card that I could get when Kent Lowe puts out hot dogs for the media to eat? And, you know, I'm not a big hot dog guy myself. I, you know, Fuzzy's, Burgers from Chick-fil-A, that's more up my alley. Is there any way that, like, I can sneak over there and get a little freebie, or can we just get Kent to get some of that food down in the media room? What do I have to do to grease those wheels?
We have tried with Kent, but as you know with Kent, if there's one thing he's protective of, it's his media food. So what he says goes. I am not comfortable trying to go around his system there.
All right, I'll just stay in his ear about that. Now that I'm over here, I feel like maybe, you know, his office is right around the corner. I can just you know what? Let's just wrap up this recording, and as soon as we leave, I'll go get in his ear about that. But Matt, I appreciate it. Anything else that we didn't talk about that you want to go ahead and plug?
No, you know, I think just want to echo what you said earlier. We got four games coming up in the PMAC here in December, and, you know, it's always great to have our fan support, and our team really feeds off that. And I think we'll have a strong showing here in December and get ready for conference play.
Yep, that's December 1st against Grambling State, December 9th against Incarnate Word, December 21st against Furman, who's got some skins on the wall this year. They've beaten Villanova and Loyola Chicago, two Final Four teams last year. And then December 28th against UL Monroe. So lots of good basketball coming to the PMAC, and obviously lots of good food there as well. Matt, appreciate your time, man.
Thank you for having me.